Discipline isn't just about routines, habits, or morning alarms. It's about identity. It's about creating a structure in a world that constantly tries to pull you into chaos. And if your mind feels foggy, scattered, or restless, it's not because you're broken. It's because you've been living without order, without a personal law. And in the absence of order, the mind begins to rot in subtle ways through wasted mornings, missed intentions, and quiet regret. The Stoics knew this long before neuroscience confirmed it. They didn't chase motivation. They didn't wait for the perfect moment. They lived by a code, a law, that kept them anchored, especially when emotions surged or life lost meaning. Because they understood one thing with brutal clarity: without inner discipline, you become a prisoner to outer chaos. But when you reclaim your mind, when you choose structure over impulse, intention over habit, presence over distraction, you become dangerous in the best possible way. This episode isn't about tips or tricks. It's about rewiring how you think, act, and live. It's about turning discipline into something sacred, not cold and mechanical, but alive and intentional. Whether you're an artist, a student, a leader, or someone simply trying to hold yourself together, these 12 Stoic laws will reshape how you approach your time, your energy, and your inner world. They're not just rules, they're reminders that you don't need to feel ready to become who you were meant to be. You just need to move, especially when it's hard, especially when it's quiet, especially when no one's watching. Because true discipline doesn't shout. It doesn't need attention. It just shows up, day after day, until you wake up one morning and realize you didn't just build better habits. You built a new self. 1. Discipline is self-respect made visible. Ask yourself this: how do you treat yourself when no one's watching? Not when the camera is on. Not when someone is expecting something from you. Not when there's a deadline or applause. I mean those quiet moments, when it's just you, your choices, and your future. Because that's where real discipline lives, not in schedules or spreadsheets, but in those private, invisible crossroads where you choose between who you are and who you're trying to become. Discipline, at its core, isn't about punishment. It's not about restriction, harshness, or denying yourself joy. It's not about being robotic or unemotional. It's about self-respect. It's about making decisions that align with your long-term values rather than your short-term moods. It's choosing what strengthens you over what soothes you, not because you hate yourself, but because you finally respect yourself enough to stop abandoning your potential. That's what Epictetus meant when he said, "No man is free who is not master of himself," because if you don't master yourself, your urges, your fears, your laziness, your distractions, then someone or something else will. You become ruled by whatever is loudest in the moment, a craving, a mood, a social trend, and slowly, without noticing, you become a stranger to your own potential. Most people think discipline means force, as if you have to push yourself with shame. But real discipline feels different. It's not a war with yourself. It's a reunion, a return, a moment of standing up inside your own life and saying, "I'm not going to betray myself again." Let's take an everyday example. It's 6 a.m. Your alarm goes off. You're tired. You feel resistance. Every part of you wants to snooze. But you've made a promise. Not to the world, but to yourself. So you sit up. You stretch. You move. Not because it feels good. Not because you're motivated. But because that moment is a declaration. My goals are more important than my mood. That's discipline. And it's beautiful. Or consider this: you've committed to improving your health. And now you're at a dinner table where everyone's indulging, joking, pressuring. You feel that pull to belong, to relax, to give in. But you breathe. You remember why you started. You make a conscious choice. That moment may seem small, but it's sacred. It's not about the calories. It's about reclaiming the role of author in your own life. Discipline is also how we teach others how to treat us. When you respect your own time, others will start to. When you hold boundaries, others feel them. When you keep your word to yourself, you walk differently. You speak differently. You carry yourself not with arrogance, but with quiet authority, because you know you're living in alignment. You're not perfect, but you're real. And in a world of endless noise, that's powerful. But let's not pretend it's easy. Discipline will make you face your shadows. It will expose how often you've lied to yourself about how much time you had, how you'll do it tomorrow, how this one time doesn't count. It forces you to stop romanticizing your potential and start working for it. That's why so many people avoid it. Because it's easier to live in the illusion of later than in the discomfort of now. And that's where Stoicism comes in, not as a set of rules, but as a compass. A Stoic doesn't wait for motivation. They don't negotiate with their lesser impulses. They act intentionally, repeatedly, not because it's glamorous, but because it's right. Because they understand that every disciplined choice is a vote for the person they want to become. So if you're struggling with discipline, don't look for hacks. Look for honesty. Where are you abandoning yourself? Where are you giving your future away for a moment of relief? And more importantly, what would change if you started showing up for yourself the same way you show up for others? Discipline is not something you turn on and off. It's not an Instagram trend. It's a way of living that tells the world, I matter. My purpose matters. I refuse to waste this life. You don't need to do everything at once. Just begin with one promise kept, one decision made with intention, one morning reclaimed. That's how you start to remember your own strength. Because the real flex isn't waking up at 5 a.m. It's keeping your word when no one's watching. It's building a self you can trust. And that's the kind of freedom no one can give you and no one can take away. 2. Build discipline that matches your nature. Not all discipline is created equal, and not all discipline is yours. Some people adopt strict morning routines, cold showers, endless to-do lists, and feel empowered. Others try the same and feel suffocated, lost in someone else's rhythm. Why? Because discipline that doesn't match your nature will always feel like a cage. It might look good on paper, it might impress on social media, but if it's not rooted in your temperament, your strengths, your inner structure, it won't last. Or worse, it'll make you resent the very idea of structure. The Stoics weren't trying to make everyone the same. They didn't believe in one-size-fits-all discipline. They believed in self-governance. Marcus Aurelius wasn't Seneca. Epictetus, born a slave, had a different rhythm than an emperor. But what they shared was a principle that each person must find their own internal law and live by it. Not by copying someone else's life, but by understanding themselves deeply enough to craft a discipline that actually fits. Let's break that down. Imagine a soldier and a poet. The soldier thrives in structure, hierarchy, precision. The poet might need long hours of solitude, moments of inspiration, periods of quiet chaos. Both need discipline, but not the same kind. The soldier's code might be early rising, physical training, and tight scheduling. The poet's code might involve strict boundaries around distraction, commitment to daily writing, and rituals that nourish creativity. Same principle, different application. And what about you? Have you paused to ask yourself, what kind of discipline actually fuels me? Not what gets the most praise, not what fits the productivity trend, but what makes you come alive. Some people need silence in the morning, others need movement. Some work best in long, deep focus, others thrive in short, intense bursts. What matters is building a rhythm that you can respect, and then protecting it like your life depends on it. Because in many ways, it does. This is where honesty becomes essential. If you're constantly failing to stick to a system, maybe the problem isn't your willpower. Maybe it's the system itself. Maybe you're trying to live inside someone else's discipline because it seems superior. But discipline isn't about superiority. It's about sustainability, about creating a structure you want to return to, even when life gets messy, one that reflects who you are and also pushes you gently toward who you're becoming. Let's take a practical example. Suppose you keep trying to wake up at 5 a.m. because a book told you that's what successful people do, but every morning you hit snooze, you feel like a failure, you start thinking you're lazy. But what if your most creative energy hits at 10 p.m.? What if your body, your biology, your flow all prefer evenings? In that case, discipline would mean honoring that truth and building your structure around it, not against it. This doesn't mean you let yourself off the hook. It means you stop fighting your nature and start working with it. The Stoics would call this living according to nature, not just the nature of the world, but your inner nature. Discipline becomes powerful when it's built with that awareness. It becomes less about force and more about form, less about control, more about congruence. And here's what happens when you find that rhythm. Discipline stops feeling like a war. You stop relying on willpower and start flowing in alignment. You move through your day with purpose, not because someone's watching, but because the structure feels like home. That's the goal, not perfection, not performance, but a structure that supports your clarity, protects your focus, and honors your design. So today, ask yourself, am I building discipline that actually matches who I am? Or am I still borrowing systems from others, hoping they'll fix me? And then ask, what would it look like to build my own code? One that respects both my strengths and my blind spots. Because real discipline isn't about fitting in someone else's mold. It's about becoming the architect of your own mind. 3. Without order, you pay in silence. Disorder rarely screams. It whispers. It shows up in the little things, the unread messages, the skipped workout, the pile of clothes you'll deal with tomorrow, the constant mental noise you can't quite name. It's subtle, quiet, but cumulative, and slowly it drains you, not all at once, but hour by hour, decision by decision, until you wake up one day and wonder, why do I feel so heavy? The Stoics knew that disorder isn't just a physical state, it's a spiritual one. When your mind is cluttered, your actions follow. When your time is unstructured, your life becomes reactive. And when your days have no rhythm, your soul has no peace. That's the true cost of living without order. Not just lost productivity, but lost presence, lost clarity, lost connection to the person you were trying to become. You might think it's harmless to keep things loose, to figure it out as you go. But the truth is, when you don't give your time a direction, the world will give it one for you. Distractions don't need permission. Notifications don't knock. And chaos always finds a way in when you haven't built a wall against it. And here's the trickiest part. You don't always feel the consequences immediately. Disorder punishes slowly. It doesn't slap you, it seeps in. You start skipping your journal, you start checking your phone first thing. You stop planning your week. You eat what's easiest, say yes to what's convenient, postpone what's important, and the world doesn't fall apart. Not right away, but you do. Quietly, invisibly. Seneca said, "It is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste much of it. And much of that waste comes not from laziness, but from lack of clarity. When you don't have a structure, you live in reaction. You respond to life instead of directing it. You become a passenger, pulled by moods, impulses, and other people's agendas. That's not freedom. That's invisible slavery. Now let's be clear. Order isn't about rigidity. It's not about controlling every moment of your day or micromanaging your life until it becomes a lifeless routine. It's about creating containers, mental and emotional boundaries, that protect what matters most. A morning routine is a container, a writing schedule, a weekly reflection, a phone curfew. These aren't restrictions. They're acts of rescue, acts of rebellion against the chaos the world wants to trap you in. When you reclaim your time, you reclaim your energy, and with it, your ability to choose, to act with intention, not just instinct. That's what Stoicism calls us to do, not to control the world, but to control our orientation to it. And that starts with inner order, a kind of mental architecture that supports your growth instead of sabotaging it. Take a moment and think, what have I been tolerating in my life that quietly drains me? Where have I let small disorder become daily weight? Maybe it's the clutter in your space. Maybe it's the mental tab you've left open. The conversation you need to have. The project you keep delaying. The goal you keep redefining because it scares you. Whatever it is, name it. And then make a decision. Not a perfect one, just a clear one. Because the longer you live without order, the more you suffer in silence, not from loud failure, but from quiet erosion. And that's the kind of suffering that never makes headlines, but ends up stealing years of your life. So, create order in your thoughts, in your time, in your space, not to impress anyone, but to finally give your mind the structure it's been begging for. Because discipline isn't about control. It's about freedom through design. And order is the blueprint that sets your freedom in motion. 4. Success can make you soft. Stay sharp. Success is seductive. It lulls you into thinking the climb is over, that you've arrived, that the work is done. And that's exactly when the real danger begins, not in failure, but in comfort. Because comfort breeds complacency, and complacency kills momentum. One of the most dangerous lies the mind tells you is, you've earned a break, not a rest, a break from your discipline, your values, your code. But breaks like that don't restore you, they dissolve you. The Stoics warned against this trap often. They believed that external success was never the goal. Internal strength was, and internal strength requires constant sharpening. Marcus Aurelius, an emperor, had more power than almost anyone alive, yet he wrote daily reminders to himself not to fall into laziness, ego, or indulgence. Why? Because he knew that with each reward came a new risk, the risk of forgetting what built that success in the first place. Think about it. You grind, you sacrifice, you discipline yourself, then you get a win, a promotion, recognition, a result, and almost instantly the urgency fades. You sleep in a little longer, you skip the workout, you stop journaling, you rationalize the distractions. But here's the harsh truth. What got you here will not keep you here. If you stop doing the work once it starts paying off, you've already started your decline. This doesn't mean you can't rest. Rest is part of the process, But there's a difference between strategic rest and emotional surrender. One is renewal, the other is regression, and the difference is awareness. A Stoic doesn't fear rest. They fear unconscious drift, that slow, subtle slide into softness where your edges dull and your fire fades. You become a version of yourself that's surviving off past effort, not present intention. In practical terms, this might look like getting complacent in your relationships, assuming they'll sustain themselves, or losing hunger in your learning, thinking you already know enough, or letting your health slide because you've earned the pizza. It's not dramatic. It's just slow, quiet, decay masked as reward. So how do you stay sharp? By remembering that success isn't a finish line, it's a checkpoint. And the moment you reach it, you ask, what's next? What part of me needs refining now? Where am I starting to coast? The Stoic mindset treats discipline as a lifelong craft, not a phase. It doesn't matter how far you've come. What matters is, are you still showing up with the same clarity, hunger, and humility that got you started? Discipline after success looks different. It's not fueled by desperation anymore. It's fueled by devotion to your principles, to your practice, to your vision. You don't train because you're behind. You train because you're committed. Because ease is not the goal. Excellence is. Not perfection, not obsession, but sustained, intentional growth. So if you're in a season of success right now, don't relax your standards. Refine them. Use the stability you've built not as an excuse to pause, but as a platform to level up. And if you've fallen asleep a bit, no shame. Just wake up. Recommit. Recenter. Not because you're losing, but because you remember who you are. And if you ever forget, come back to this. Discipline built you, and only discipline will keep you. 5. Don't wait for motivation. Move without it. How many days have you lost waiting to feel ready? Waiting for inspiration to strike, for the mood to improve, for energy to arrive like a divine signal that now, finally, is the time to act. This is the trap most people fall into, mistaking emotion for permission. But here's what the Stoics knew, and what modern neuroscience now echoes. Motivation is a byproduct, not a prerequisite. It doesn't come before the work, it comes from the work. The mind loves to negotiate. It whispers things like, let's start tomorrow, or just one more hour of rest, or you're not in the right headspace today. But these are not logical thoughts. They're ego-driven delay tactics. The part of you that wants comfort will always be louder than the part of you that wants growth. And if you wait for the noise to quiet before you move, you'll stay stuck forever. Because the truth is, motivation is unreliable. Discipline is not. This is why the Stoic doesn't consult their mood to determine their direction. They consult their principles. Epictetus didn't say, do the right thing when you feel good. He said, first say to yourself what you would be, and then do what you have to do. That's not a feeling, that's a decision. Picture a craftsman, a sculptor. They don't ask themselves daily whether they feel like working. They show up, they pick up the tools, and somewhere in the motion, not before it, focus arrives. Momentum builds, clarity returns. That's how discipline works. Action first, emotion follows. And yet we've built an entire culture around waiting. Waiting for the right time, the right mindset, the right energy. But life doesn't wait. Time doesn't wait. And if you want to build something meaningful, a strong body, a focused mind, a clear identity, you cannot live at the mercy of how you feel. You must learn to move, especially when you don't want to. because that's when the movement matters most. Let's get practical. You don't want to work out. Put on your shoes. Walk outside. 5 minutes. That's it. You don't want to write? Open the page. Type one sentence. You don't want to confront the uncomfortable task. Set a timer for 10 minutes and start anyway. The point isn't perfection, it's initiation. Because once the body is in motion, the mind starts catching up. And what once felt impossible starts to feel inevitable. The Stoics understood that the hardest part of discipline is the beginning, the first breath, the first step, the first shift from passivity to presence. That's where your power lies, not in grand gestures, but in consistent micro-actions that ignore the mood and obey the mission. So ask yourself this, what am I putting off because I don't feel ready? And then go deeper. What would happen if I stopped needing to feel ready at all? Because once you learn to act without motivation, you become something rare, someone who shows up regardless, someone who doesn't wait to feel powerful, because they know they already are. 6. Live by conscious choice, not auto-reaction. How much of your life is truly chosen, and how much is just inherited noise? It's a question that cuts deeper than it first appears, because most of us are not living, we're reacting, responding to expectations we never questioned, playing roles we never auditioned for, running habits we never consciously installed. We wake up, reach for our phones, follow routines, engage in conversations, even chase goals, all on autopilot. Not because they reflect our inner truth, but because they're familiar, comfortable, safe. The Stoics, and later thinkers like Carl Jung, warned us about this unconscious drift. Jung said, "Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate." In other words, if you don't stop to examine your patterns, they will become your prison. And you won't even know it. You'll think it's just who you are. But it's not. It's just what you've never questioned. Discipline, at its highest level, isn't just about effort. It's about awareness. It's about choosing your life moment by moment, not reacting from old programming, but acting from present clarity. That means pausing before you say yes, thinking before you reach for that distraction, asking, is this mine? Did I choose this? Or did I inherit it from someone else's script? Let's be real. A lot of what we call discipline is just deeply conditioned behavior. Maybe you grew up in a family where achievement was the only way to earn love, so now you overwork and call it drive. Maybe you were taught to stay small, so you sabotage progress and call it humility. Maybe you avoid conflict not because you're peaceful, but because you're scared. These are not conscious choices. These are unconscious responses, and they are not neutral. They are powerful forces shaping your entire life. To live like a Stoic is to slow down enough to ask hard questions. Why do I chase this goal? Why do I eat this way, speak this way, think this way? Does it serve me, or just feel familiar? When you begin to live by conscious choice, everything changes. You stop reacting to life and start creating it. You no longer follow habits blindly. You build them with intention. You stop being pulled by external currents and start walking in a direction that feels like yours. This doesn't mean you discard everything from your past. It means you sort through it. Keep what aligns, release what doesn't, redesign what needs refinement. That's the true work of discipline, not just doing hard things, but doing the right hard things. The ones that actually move you toward who you want to be. In daily life, this could look like shifting your morning routine from scrolling to silence. It could mean catching yourself before you react with anger and choosing curiosity instead. It could mean letting go of a long-held belief that no longer serves your growth. These moments may seem small, but they are revolutionary because they're no longer unconscious. They're chosen. So pause for a moment today. Reflect. Ask yourself, where am I still living from default, not design? What part of my discipline is just fear in disguise? And what would it look like to act, not out of habit, not out of pressure, but out of truth? Because the power of discipline isn't just in the doing, it's in the deciding. And when your life is filled with choices made from presence, not programming, that's not just order, that's freedom. 7. What you do in private defines you in public. Character is not built in the spotlight. It's built in silence, in the quiet hours when no one is watching, no one is praising, and no one is keeping score. That's where the real work happens. The decisions you make when you're tired, the promises you keep when there's no pressure, the habits you uphold when applause is absent. The Stoics understood this deeply. Who you are in private becomes who you are in public, not the other way around. We live in an era obsessed with performance. Social media rewards visibility, not integrity. We're praised for the highlight reel, not the behind-the-scenes discipline that makes it possible. But the truth is, public respect without private effort is fragile. It doesn't last. Eventually, the mask slips, the cracks show, and the world sees what you really built, or what you didn't. This is why Marcus Aurelius, even as Emperor of Rome, kept writing reminders to himself every night. Not for the public, not for history, for his own alignment, for the man he wanted to remain, in a position that could easily corrupt him. He knew the real battle is not external, it's internal, and it's fought daily in the shadows. Let's bring this down to real life. Anyone can give a great speech. But do they listen with patience when interrupted at home? Anyone can post a powerful quote, but do they live by it when their emotions flare up? Anyone can appear disciplined in front of a coach, a boss, a mentor. But what about when no one checks in? No deadlines, no consequences, just you and your reflection. That's where legacy is carved, not in your best moments, but in your repeated moments, the morning you get up when it's hard, the evening you resist the easy escape, the hour you sit with discomfort instead of numbing it. These moments may seem invisible, but they are not meaningless. They are the roots beneath the surface, and the deeper the roots, the stronger the tree. There's also a psychological shift that happens when your private actions are aligned. You gain what no performance can give you, self-trust. And self-trust is a superpower. When you know you'll do what you said, even when no one is watching, you walk through the world differently. You don't over-explain. You don't seek approval. You don't need to convince others of your strength because you've already proven it to yourself. But the opposite is also true. If you repeatedly break your own word when no one's watching, if you cut corners, lie to yourself, skip the hard things behind closed doors, you carry that. It lingers. It shows in your posture, your eyes, your tone. It eats away at your confidence, not loudly but constantly, because deep down, you know, I can't rely on myself. This is why Stoic discipline isn't about impressing the world. It's about impressing upon your soul the weight of your choices. It's about treating your alone time as sacred, as the training ground for the kind of person you want to be when the world is watching or when it's not. So ask yourself, who am I when no one's around? When the camera's off, the door is closed, and the only witness is my own conscience. Because that version of you, the private, unfiltered, unpraised you, is the one building your future. And the more aligned that version becomes, the less effort it takes to shine in public. Because you're not performing, you're simply being. 8. Tame the dopamine, rewire the reward. If your mind feels restless, scattered, or addicted to stimulation, it's not a personal flaw, it's biology hijacked. We are living in a dopamine-saturated world, engineered distractions at every corner, endless scrolls, notifications, pop-ups, quick hits of validation. Our brains have been rewired to crave novelty, to chase spikes, to prioritize short-term pleasure over long-term growth. And the most dangerous part, we don't even notice it, because it feels normal. But here's what the Stoics would ask you. Does this habit serve your soul or just your senses? Because what feels good in the moment isn't always what strengthens you, and the path to true discipline begins with this realization. Not all rewards are equal. Some are shallow, loud, empty. Others are deep, quiet, lasting. The work is in learning to rewire your brain, to stop chasing cheap dopamine, and start earning meaningful satisfaction. Let's break that down. Dopamine itself isn't the enemy. It's a natural part of how the brain learns what to repeat. But the modern world floods you with artificial stimuli. Every ping, like, clip, and scroll teaches your brain to expect easy hits of pleasure without effort. And so when it comes time to focus, to read, to work out, to sit in stillness, your brain rebels. It says, "This is boring. Give me something faster." That's not weakness. That's conditioning. So how do we fight back? The Stoics wouldn't say eliminate pleasure. They would say replace it with deeper forms of reward. Instead of binging content, find joy in completion, finishing the book, completing the task, building momentum. Instead of the quick thrill of distraction, cultivate the slow satisfaction of mastery. Instead of the high of being liked, learn the quiet pride of keeping your word. This shift requires intention. It means designing your life so that the path of least resistance leads you toward your values, not away from them. Turn your phone off during deep work. Keep it out of reach during meals. Replace aimless browsing with intentional learning. End the day with journaling instead of mindless scrolling. These are not small acts. They are acts of mental resistance in a world designed to keep you addicted. And with time, something amazing happens. Your brain begins to rewire. You start craving the real wins. Not likes, but progress. Not validation, but growth. You start to associate pleasure with effort, with completion, with presence. And once that shift takes root, discipline becomes lighter. Not because it's easy, but because it finally feels rewarding in itself. This is what it means to tame the dopamine, not to deny yourself joy, but to upgrade it, to stop settling for crumbs when you could be building a feast. Because true satisfaction is never instant. It's earned, quietly, repeatedly. So take a moment and ask, where am I still chasing shallow rewards? Where has my mind been hijacked by cheap satisfaction? And more importantly, what would happen if I began replacing those spikes with silence, with rituals, with results? Because your brain isn't broken, it's just been trained. And the same way it was trained to chase distraction, it can be trained to crave discipline. 9. Structure is a form of mercy. We often think of structure as something cold, rigid schedules, strict calendars, a prison of routines that strip life of spontaneity. But that's only true when structure is imposed without soul. Real structure, intentional structure, isn't punishment. It's mercy. It's the act of protecting yourself from chaos, not out of fear, but out of love. Because without structure, you don't get freedom, you get fragmentation, you get burnout, you get a life filled with activity, but empty of purpose. Seneca warned us, it is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste much of it. That waste. It happens in the absence of structure. It happens when you let your day unfold by accident instead of design. When you answer every message, follow every impulse, and try to do everything at once, you end up doing nothing with presence. You go to bed exhausted but unfulfilled, busy but lost. The Stoics weren't against enjoyment. They weren't anti-pleasure or anti-freedom. What they stood for was intention. They understood that a day without structure is a day surrendered to randomness. And the cost of randomness is your peace, your progress, and your power. Let's be practical. Imagine starting your morning with no plan. You check your phone. You respond to whatever's loudest. You get pulled into a task you didn't choose. Hours pass. You react. You drift. You scramble to catch up. But the day owns you, not the other way around. That's not freedom. That's low-level suffering dressed as flexibility. Now compare that to a structured morning, even a simple one. You wake up, no phone. You sit in stillness, maybe journal, maybe stretch. You know your first task. You start it without thinking, because it's already decided. And by noon, you've already completed what matters most. That's not rigidity. That's alignment. That's mercy for your mind, your energy, your attention. The mistake many people make is thinking structure means doing more. But real structure isn't about doing more. It's about doing less, better. It's about clearing the noise so the signal can come through. It's about building a container for your highest self to actually show up. Not once a week, but daily. And it's not just about productivity, it's about emotional well-being. When your day has no rhythm, your nervous system suffers. When you constantly switch tasks, your brain tires. When you live in reactivity, anxiety becomes the baseline. But when you introduce structure, rituals, start times, end times, boundaries, your body calms, your mind clears. You create space not just for work, but for rest, joy, and reflection. Even creative souls, artists, writers, thinkers, thrive on structure. Not rigid timelines, but sacred boundaries. Time blocks for focus. Environments that support flow. Containers that allow chaos to take shape. Structure doesn't kill creativity. It channels it. So ask yourself, where am I still resisting structure out of fear it will trap me? What if structure isn't a cage, but a key? A key that unlocks clarity, discipline, and peace. A way to finally stop spinning in circles and start moving forward with purpose. Because life will pull at you from every direction, and without a structure to return to, you'll lose yourself. Give your mind the mercy it's been asking for, not with more rules, but with intelligent rhythm. Because the more structure you create around what matters, the more freedom you'll feel within it. 10. Act like the person you are becoming. Every time you make a decision, you cast a vote, not just for your future, but for your identity. You're not just building habits, you're rehearsing a self. And whether you realize it or not, every action, big or small, is a declaration of who you believe you are. The Stoics didn't just want you to do the right thing. They wanted you to become the kind of person who naturally does the right thing. That's a deeper transformation. That's discipline not as behavior, but as embodiment. Ask yourself this: who are you trying to become? Not in 5 years. Not in theory, in the small, invisible details of your day. Are your actions aligned with that version of you, or are they in conflict? Because if you want to become disciplined, powerful, calm, focused, you have to start acting like it. Not when you feel like it. Not when it's convenient. Now, this is what identity-based discipline looks like. Acting as if the future version of you already lives inside you. Let's say your vision is to be a writer. The old you waits for inspiration. The disciplined you writes every morning, even if it's bad. Let's say you want to be someone who's healthy. The old you finds excuses. The new you honors the gym like a non-negotiable appointment. The old you reacts emotionally in conflict. The new you takes a breath, then speaks with intention. In each moment, you're either reinforcing your old identity or rehearsing your new one. But here's the nuance. This isn't about pretending. It's about practicing. You don't fake confidence. You practice it. You don't wait for emotional strength. You practice it. And eventually, what started as an act becomes a trait. That's how we become who we want to be, not by waiting, but by training ourselves into it. Marcus Aurelius didn't just write about virtue. He lived it. He used his journal as a mirror to examine his behavior and hold himself accountable, not to what he had done, but to who he was becoming. He understood that identity is not static. It is sculpted, action by action, day by day. This process is subtle but powerful. It means showing up even when you don't see results yet, because the action isn't just building outcomes, it's building you. You don't meditate once and become calm. You don't run once and become fit. You don't study once and become wise. But you do those things often enough, and something shifts. You stop acting like the person you were, and start becoming the one you respected from afar. And let's be honest, becoming someone new is uncomfortable. It requires letting go of familiar excuses, familiar identities, familiar emotional habits. That's why many people resist it, because it forces them to answer the deeper question: am I willing to give up who I've been to become who I know I could be? So the invitation is simple. Stop waiting to feel like it. Start acting as if. Act like the person who wakes up early. Act like the person who follows through. Act like the person who leads with integrity, speaks with clarity, and protects their time like it matters. Because it does. Eventually, your brain catches up. Your emotions align. Your identity locks in. Because discipline is not a mood. It's a message you send to your future self. One action at a time. 11. Every minute is a brick in the temple of your life. You get 1,440 of them each day. Minutes, silent bricks, invisible currency. And the question is never whether you have time. The question is always, what are you building with it? Because whether you're aware or not, every minute is being spent. Every hour is casting shape. Every small action repeated often enough becomes a wall, a room, a structure. Until one day, you're standing inside the temple of your own life. For better or worse. The Stoics were obsessed with time, not because they feared death, but because they understood its value. Seneca wrote, "People are frugal in guarding their personal property, but as soon as it comes to squandering time, they are most wasteful of the one thing in which it is right to be stingy. Why? Because everything else can be replaced. Time cannot. Every minute wasted on distraction, avoidance, or indecision is a brick misplaced. And a temple built with broken bricks will eventually crumble under its own weight." Think of someone you admire, not for their fame, but for their strength of character, their consistency, their quiet power. That person wasn't built by one big moment. They were shaped minute by minute. The way they chose to respond to discomfort, the way they structured their day, the way they gave focus to their work, their thoughts, their relationships. These aren't just actions, they are architecture, and you are doing the same. Right now. When you scroll for 30 minutes, it doesn't seem like much. But do that every day, and by the end of the year, you've lost 11 entire days of your life. Not resting, not connecting, just escaping. On the flip side, write for 30 minutes a day, and in a year, you've written a book. Read for 15, and you've consumed volumes of wisdom. Reflect for 10, and you begin to see your patterns, your mistakes, your growth. It's not the quantity of time that changes you, it's the intention behind it. This is why the Stoics practiced daily reflection, why they journaled, planned, prioritized, because they knew if you're not building with your minutes, you're eroding. There is no neutral. Every minute is a brick. The only question is it strengthening your temple or weakening it? This doesn't mean you need to be productive every second. That's not discipline, that's delusion. Rest matters, joy matters, presence matters. But when you rest, when you play, truly play, don't blur your moments with guilt or mindless escape. That's what burns you out, not activity, but fragmentation. So what does this look like in practice? You wake up, and instead of diving into your phone, you take 10 minutes to breathe, to reflect, to plan. That's a brick. You sit down to work. And instead of multitasking, you give focused attention to one thing. That's another brick. You say no to the impulse, yes to the workout, no to the distraction, yes to the project you keep avoiding, brick by brick by brick, until the day ends. And you step back, not exhausted, but grounded. Because you didn't just survive the day. You built with it. That's what it means to live intentionally. Not by accident, not in fragments, but in alignment. So ask yourself today, what am I building with my minutes? Is this hour moving me closer to the person I respect, or further away? Because the temple of your life isn't built in someday. It's built in now. 12. If you don't measure it, it's not growth. You say you want to improve, but how do you know if you are? If you're not measuring, you're guessing. And if you're guessing, you're probably drifting. That's the hard truth most people avoid. Growth without reflection is just motion. Discipline without awareness is just effort without direction. The Stoics understood this long before modern psychology confirmed it. Without self-examination, there is no evolution. You can't improve what you don't track. You can't master what you don't measure. Aristotle said, "We are what we repeatedly do." Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. But habits don't form by accident. They form by attention. And attention comes from measurement. Not to punish yourself, but to clarify your path. This isn't about obsessing over stats or turning your life into a spreadsheet. It's about making your growth visible, measurable, real. Because what gets tracked gets respected. Think of it like this. You wouldn't build a house without checking your measurements. You wouldn't navigate a ship without checking your direction. But most people try to build their life, their focus, their values, their discipline, without ever stopping to check their progress. And then they wonder why they feel stuck, lost, disconnected from their goals. It's not because they're lazy, it's because they're blind. They're working hard, but in the wrong direction. Let's get practical. Do you know how often you break promises to yourself? How much time you spend on distractions each week? How often you keep your word, follow through, move forward? Without measurement, these answers stay vague. And vagueness is the enemy of progress. But when you start tracking, even just a little, everything changes. You become more honest, more aware, more precise. You start seeing the patterns, the triggers, the excuses, the moments you tend to fall apart. And with that knowledge, you gain something rare, choice. The Stoics practiced this through daily reflection. Marcus Aurelius asked himself at night, "What did I do well? Where did I fall short? What can I do better tomorrow?" That's measurement. That's accountability. And over time, it becomes your compass. You stop repeating mistakes unconsciously. You start adjusting consciously. That's how excellence is born. Not from a single breakthrough, but from daily calibration. Maybe for you, this looks like a simple habit tracker. Maybe it's journaling at night. Maybe it's reviewing your goals weekly. It doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be consistent. Because when you measure your effort, even in silence, something profound happens. You begin to respect it. You begin to see that discipline isn't just something you force. It's something you build, brick by brick, pattern by pattern, choice by choice. So ask yourself now, where am I still guessing in my growth? What would change if I started tracking, not to be perfect, but to be present? Because without measurement, discipline becomes a blur. But with it, you gain clarity, direction power. And that's how you stop going in circles and start becoming who you were meant to be. Discipline isn't about chains. It's about choice. It's not cold or harsh or lifeless. It's not some extreme routine meant to punish you into becoming someone else. True discipline, the kind the Stoics lived and breathed, is about building a life that reflects your deepest values. It's about aligning your minutes with your mission. It's about taking the chaos the world throws at you and turning it into order, quietly, relentlessly, daily. Because without order, the mind crumbles. Without structure, your energy scatters. Without reflection, your potential rots in silence. But with discipline, real, intentional, self-respecting discipline, everything changes. You walk taller. You think clearer. You act not out of pressure, but out of purpose. And slowly, silently, you become someone you can rely on. You don't need to be perfect. You don't need to overhaul your life in one dramatic gesture. You just need to return again and again to what matters. Lay the brick, do the work, hold the standard. And when you fall, rise with clarity. Because each act of discipline is a message. I am becoming the person I was born to be. So stop waiting to feel ready. Stop waiting for motivation. Stop performing for others and start aligning with yourself. 12 laws, one mission, not to control life, but to master how you move through it. If this episode spoke to something deep in you, share it with someone who's ready to take back their mind. And if you're walking this path quietly, with no applause, no shortcuts, just intention, you're not alone. Keep building, keep sharpening, and keep showing up like it matters, because it does.